In Cuba, thousands of private documents left behind by Ernest Hemingway are at last being made available to the public. Since his suicide in 1961, Cuba has operated his ranch near Havana as a museum. The basement, however, has been sealed until now, its contents closely guarded by a government anxious to protect the legacy of an icon they consider their own. NPR's Jerry Haddon reports from Havana.
An old wooden basement door that's protected this massive trove of Hemingway's writings for more than four decades swings open.
Ah, good.
The small, dark basement is a scholar's paradise. Unexamined letters, reworked screenplays, and chapter excerpts lie scattered on shelves, all promising to shed new light on the author and his 20-year love affair with the island. The first North American scholar ever to descend the stairs is Sandra Spanier, a Hemingway researcher from Penn State University. She examines one parched letter from a Hemingway relative written sometime around 1950.
This is interesting because he must be finishing up For Whom the Bell
yes.
Tolls. Very best of luck on the last words in the book and hope everything goes slickly. Regards to Marty and Manolo and Gregorio. Les.
Hemingway fans know how For Whom the Bell Tolls ends, with the doomed American Robert Jordan bidding farewell to his Spanish love Maria, as in the screen adaptation.
Now they can't stop us ever. She's going on with me. Yes, my...
One of the 20th century's classic novels could have ended differently had Hemingway finished and included an epilogue hidden here in the basement. It opens with a member of Jordan's desperate band of Republican rebels returning at dusk to find Jordan's lifeless body. Hemingway anguished over that ending with his editor, Max Perkins. Jenny Phillips is Perkins' granddaughter and the one who convinced Cuba to start preserving and copying these unstudied writings. The originals will stay here under improved climate control. At Hemingway's favorite Havana daiquiri bar, El Floridita, Phillips says Cubans have done their best to preserve the treasure from Cuba's sweltering heat and humidity.
But they need the technological resources that they just can't afford. Trust is everything. Building trust with the Cubans that we're not going to take anything away from them, that it belongs to them, it's part of their national heritage. We simply want to help them preserve them because of the value of these documents.
After Hemingway killed himself in Idaho in 1961, his fourth wife, Mary, hastily carried out of Cuba what she could of his writings. The rest, along with his ranch, she donated to Cuba. A gesture not unlike one by Hemingway himself, who in 1954 accepted his Nobel Prize from Cuba, then gave it to the Cuban people.
No writer who knows the great writers who did not receive the prize can accept it other than with humility. Writing at its best is a lonely life. He grows in public stature as he sheds his loneliness, and often his work deteriorates. For he does his work alone, and if he is a good enough writer, he must face eternity, or the lack of it, each day.
Hemingway's lean prose, so different from the great Cuban Baroque classics, is still widely taught in Cuba. He penned The Old Man and the Sea here, basing the main character on the captain of his personal fishing boat. Never a man for the limelight, the burly hunter and fisherman came to Cuba for solitude.
What he wanted and what he said in letters to me is that he loved being in a place where he was more or less left alone.
That's Lillian Ross, a longtime writer for The New Yorker magazine, who profiled Hemingway and became his friend.
He wanted to fish there. He wanted to live there. He liked the climate. He tried to work there. He resented the interruptions, you know, wide-eyed college students and graduate students coming there and taking advantage of his hospitality and hanging around and keeping him from his writing. But he was always very gracious and very generous with them, too.
Hemingway left Cuba soon after Fidel Castro's revolution. The two larger-than-life figures met on only a few occasions. Nevertheless, Castro made a showing this week at the ranch to kick off the U.S.-Cuban Preservation Project. He credited For Whom the Bell Tolls with helping him defeat the Batista government's 80,000-strong army in 1959.
La concepción de la guerra.
I learned from it the concept of war, the aging leader said, and the possibilities of fighting very superior forces by using the right tactics in irregular warfare. Hyperbole, perhaps, but Cuba has long drawn legitimacy from Hemingway's decision to live nearly the last third of his life here. The author once said the test of a good book is how much you can throw away. So the world will never know what among these new findings would have eventually been published and what Hemingway would have rather tossed in the trash. Jerry Haddon, NPR News, Havana.